Welcome to this week's Norwich City Pinkin.com podcast. Welcome to Argent Towers. I'm David Fraser, and alongside me are the EDP's head of news, Ian Clark, and our chief Norwich City correspondent, Paddy Davitt. Unfortunately, we are coming to you on the back of a miserable end to the Championship season for the Canaries, a 5-1 defeat at Hillsborough. Clarky, I'll come to you first. You were listening to it from the safety of of our Norwich office. How did it sound on the radio?
Well, it sounded pretty grim. I was here doing the weekend news shift, and I was following you boys on social media and trying to keep an eye on the Championship relegation battle on Sky Sports News. But yeah, I mean, from a Norwich point of view, it sounded really grim. You know, you could argue that both teams were on the beach, but clearly Sheffield Wednesday had kept something there to play rather than just the abject surrender that seemed to come from Norwich.
Absolutely. We'll move on to James Maddison shortly. I'm sure all of you are well aware that he went off injured in the 11th minute. But if we just deal with the game firstly, Pad, it was pretty grim, wasn't it? A long day. You know, we had to set off early in the morning with it being 12:30 kickoff, and a long day for fans, and a hot day as well. So I'd imagine most people were feeling pretty drained by the time they got back to Norfolk.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and more power to those fans. You know, we just discussed it before we started the pod. You know, 1,000+, I think. And I mean, traditionally, you boys would put me straight, but being a Norwich fan away from home has been quite a miserable pastime many a season. But as poor as they were on Sunday, it is worth, I think, both discussing this weekend and the season as a whole, bit of context. You know, they've been pretty decent away from home. We can all reel off the backs against the wall type wins, notably the derby. So away from home, overall, I think you would say they've probably, certainly for me, I think overachieved, really. But that was a terrible way to finish because they were so poor. And it was the manner of the goals as well again. You know, it was they were beaten up basically by that in a legal sense, in terms of football, by that big lump, Adhinuhi. For that guy to be scoring three goals, and you know, if not for Gunn, there would have been four or five he would have been walking away with.
He did actually make some good saves in amongst it all.
And all he is, you can see what he is, he's just a very physical, imposing presence. Same as the guy, Matt Smith, who bullied him at QPR. Same as QPR back in August, Steve Morrison, formerly of the Parish, and the boy Gregory. You know, that to me, moving into next season, is a major concern because it doesn't look like they can deal with those type of physical, pretty uncomplicated forwards that you get in this division more often than not. And also worrying is you take Grant Hanley out of the back line, they do look very brittle. And if the squad or the front 11 are so pivotal that they need to be out there and fit and not suspended every week, then that would be a concern because the reality is over a 46-game Championship season, you're going to need to dip into your reserves in terms of the squad depth. And that depth isn't there. It's clear to see. You know, you take Tete out of that midfield, they look very defensively vulnerable. You take Maddison out and the creativity isn't there. And we all know the issues at the top end of the pitch. So yeah, they're the underlying concerns for me, but I wouldn't personally want to go too far into what happened at Sheffield is indicative of the whole season. That was poor, but there's been some very good spells as well, mixed in with the dross, should we say.
Yeah, the home form has been very costly, and the lack of goals, of course, but what away wins at Bristol City, Reading, Middlesbrough, Sheffield United, Ipswich, Reading, Birmingham. That's probably above average. In terms of the actual goals, Christoph Zimmermann, your heart just sank for him when he played that back pass. It reminded me of Russell Martin's one against Liverpool in the 5-4. And, you know, like you say, he's stepping in for Grant Hanley and he's not covered himself in glory there. I mean, do you think I'm being a bit harsh by saying that fans have been complimentary of him because he's such a top guy as well? And perhaps you could say the same, in my opinion, of Harrison Reid. I don't think on the pitch either of them have been brilliant, but because they're such nice guys, they seem to gain a little bit more support.
I've been more impressed with Reid, and I do like him, and I hope Southampton stay up, which means he may be available or more likely to be available. So I've been impressed by Reid, particularly the versatility to play in the engine room or right back. I think he's done well at right back. Zimmermann, yeah, I think you're right, Dave. There is an element of he's a good lad, bit of a lad, therefore that papers over one or two of the cracks, and you know, his Instagram stuff, and he visits some schools and everyone thinks he's a lovely bloke. Whereas, you know, and obviously that header at Wolves probably won him a lot of fans because he got his head on the floor. But you know, you see a lot more than I do in terms of those, you know, real gritty games where you got buckled down. And Sunday, I mean, the back pass was an absolute shocker.
Horrible.
You know, everyone's going to do one of those, but if you're also, as Paddy says, if you are being out-muscled, there's got to be a way to deal with those big lumps. And if you can't do it, then you're not going to survive as a Championship centre-half.
To be fair to Reed, he put himself about well, I thought, on Sunday. I don't think I've said Saturday yet. It was Sunday, wasn't it?
It was, right?
And it was 12:30, not 3:00. But yeah, I think Reed put himself about, but I'd almost say he's trying too hard, because he was popping up all over the pitch when perhaps Norwich needed a bit more discipline in shape, when you've got Tribal and Leitner in the mix as well. It could have actually been different though, couldn't it? At 2-0 at half time, Josh Murphy crosses for Nelson Oliveira, and that guy's confidence is just rock bottom. I think he's finished the season with, I think it was one goal in his last 22.
Oh, right.
And that was obviously the one at Wolves where, frankly, John Ruddy was at fault for it, wasn't he, in the last minute.
That is a shocking statistic.
Yeah.
For your frontline striker, 1 in 22 is... And yes, you can again mitigate and say, well, you know, the laboured, laborious passing doesn't help him, and there isn't enough support in the box. You know, how often have we seen balls come in and he's the only yellow shirt in there? But not for me. Put that to one side. He's a striker. He should be selfish. That's why he is a striker. You know, they're judged by goals. You talk to strikers, they know that they want to be judged by goals. And that's atrocious, let's be honest. That is a desperately poor return for a guy who, let's be honest, has tested the Farkas patience right back to day one at Fulham with his antics. You know, we know there's a temperamental side to him. And he's had more than enough chances to show that he could be Norwich's leading man. He's failed miserably, and for me, they need him out of the door, because he's not going to... I don't think he's going to be any different next season now. You know, there is a footballer in there, but sadly, in his Norwich career, we haven't seen enough of it. So if they can get a decent amount of money, sadly, it won't be probably what they could have got this time last summer, but hindsight's a wonderful thing. You know, they clearly felt he was a better option than Jerome moving forward. That didn't transpire. Shake hands, let him go. He strikes me, the way he's playing now, he knows he knows, and probably both knows and wants to get away now. And fresh start for him, fresh start for Norwich, because, you know, that return, not good enough.
I was saying that I hadn't noticed. I've got the Pinkin from Monday in front of me, and the main picture, page two, is that very chance I'm talking about, where he got the header so wrong that it almost hit the back of his skull and looped up in the air. So
I wonder whether there's a slightly unsettling ego in there as well, which, you know, in a team like this, you've got to have players that pull them together. You've got to have a spirit. And if you've got someone there who, you know, thinks they're better than they are, and, you know, is causing trouble, then that goes against all that we need when things are tough.
So you wouldn't be worried to see him go?
Not at all. I completely agree with Paddy, yeah.
His body language was actually interesting during the game, because it was a lot of throwing of arms about and communicating with Daniel Farke. It was almost like they were having mid-game arguments, weren't they? And it seemed to be almost Nelson sort of saying, look, this isn't working, I'm so isolated. There was one point when he passed a ball out wide to Harrison Reed when he was still at right back. The ball went straight out of play, and Oliveira chucks his hands in the air at Farker, as if Farker's going to have some kind of answer. So, you know, has he just lost the plot, do you think, to a certain extent? Because I think it was 5 goals in the first 8 games of the season.
Well, yeah, that's what I say. I mean, I think in his career, only once has he gone into double figures. And you know, he's 25, 26, 27 maybe. That's not good enough, is it? If you're a football... professional football forward striker, I would say I've never felt that he's downing tools in a sense. He's not putting the effort in. If anything, he's doing too much work outside the box. So I would never accuse him of that. But I just think, as I say, there's a talented footballer, but unfortunately the temperament, Norwich Farker doesn't seem to be able to harness it. And as I say, Clarke's point is very valid. Moving into the summer now, They can't afford to carry anybody. Every man, whether it's a loan player, whether it's a new signing, whether it's the ones already on the books, they have to extract the maximum from that individual, because Norwich don't have the luxury of carrying a bloated squad where they can dip players in and out for weeks at a time. It is very much now every element in that squad has to be giving full value, and you don't think he is.
I think if you take someone like Hanley, who, you know, is never going to be the best footballer in the world, but I think, you know, from what I see, what you get from him is absolute efficiency. He knows his job, he does it, he doesn't faff around, he doesn't, you know, there's no histrionics with him. He seems to be a good team player, he's got a good spirit and wants to win and just does the job that you want him to do. And if you could harness that and use some of that in the players that don't do it at the moment, then you've got more of a chance.
So they just need two Hanleys, two Tettys, and what, six Madisons? And they'll be sorted.
Where's the striker? And a striker.
Maybe a striker.
And a Grant Holt minus 10 years, 15 years on the club.
we can dream.
Grant Holt's an interesting one, Pad. What would, in your view, if Grant Holt was your number nine now, what would he do this year? What would he have done this year?
Well, as I say, and it's not a negative, but he was a selfish footballer in the sense that you felt he would basically trample over Chris Martin and Wes Ulan to get on the end of a cross to put it in the back of the net. Yeah. And that there's a total lack of that quality in my book in this Norwich current squad. So I think I will just come back at you with Farker's stats that he's been rolling out in the last sort of 10 days. You know, chance creation, Norwich are up there with any other team in the division. So it's not that the chances haven't been created. It's just they're not able to take them. And that squarely for me is down to the characters they have got. I mean, Srebeni you can excuse because he's a very raw individual who's come from the third tier of Germany. He's got to adapt to English football as well. So I wouldn't even begin to start judging that guy. But Oliveira, none of that applies. You know, he knows what this division is all about. And, you know, for various reasons, it isn't working. So dissolve the partnership.
And this game summed that up. Norwich, 20 shots, 2 on target, 1 goal. Sheffield Wednesday, 12 shots, 8 on target, 5 goals. You know, that's pretty lethal, to be fair.
And I did ask my question with an element of rhetoric to it, because I think if you had a Holt type player in there, he would be demanding more of those around him to give the ball where he was going to score goals, not just having a strop about it, but actually being demanding, saying, get the ball in there and I'll score goals.
We saw a bit of that, I suppose, to answer your question, under Houghton, didn't we, when Holt was finding it difficult, but he still made double figures in the Prem that year, didn't he? So that's Grant Holt for you. So it was 2-1 at half time, 2 quick goals in 3 minutes, 4-0. Sorry, Tim Closer manages to fire home after a scuffed pass from Moritz Leitner, or deflected pass, sorry, from Moritz Leitner late on. And then Jamal Lewis gives away a penalty just to put the, I don't know what to describe it, mouldy cherry on top of a horrible cake and bring it all to a close. A pretty roller coaster season, but we can't put it off any longer. James Maddison, 11th minute, goes down. It's still 0-0 at that point. Eventually limps off. That means either Pinto comes on, Harrison Reed moves into midfield, Moritz Leitner goes further forward. At that point, obviously, we were a bit worried, but at full time, very quickly, we saw that Maddison came out on crutches. And actually, if I come to you first, Clarkie, as the news broke, that was worst case scenario, wasn't it? The one thing that everybody would have said just could not happen on that day, did.
Yeah, you either want him to stay. If he's going to stay, you want him to stay and have a good break in the summer and come back fresh, you know, if he was going to stay at Norwich. If he's going to go, you want him to finish without being injured and then to get the maximum amount of money from him, so 20 million, whatever. But now there's the uncertainty. I mean, if he is badly injured and he's going to be out for 6-9 months, then, you know, you're looking at, is anybody actually going to come in for him? Probably not. Then, you know, you start next season with someone who hasn't, you know, you can't use, but you can't sell. So, yeah, I think worst case scenario is the right summary for it.
We, you know, as we sit here recording, it's Tuesday afternoon, because bank holiday, wasn't it? Yeah, Tuesday. So we don't know for sure yet, but we did have a bit of an update from the club yesterday, didn't we? And the day after the game, so we've heard that they're basically waiting for scans, aren't we? Things haven't moved on much since the game, and that's because of the type of injury.
Yeah, I mean, basically, that's Norwich's medical staff feel that the swelling needs to come down for a day or two, and I think, continuing to be assessed, but the actual scans will be midweek, probably Wednesday, you would take that, and maybe very soon after that, back end of the week, they will have a, hopefully, a clear idea of best case scenario. But even within that, the caveat always has to be that, you know, it isn't an exact science, and different players will respond. Younger players you tend to associate with recovering a bit quicker, which goes in his favour. But even within, you know, the demographic of the age graphic, you know, there'll be some players who respond to treatment better, buy into it better. I would get the sense that wouldn't be an issue with Madison. I would think he's such a professional young man that he would do everything possible in his powers to get back ahead of schedule. But as Clarkie says, you know, worst case scenario, it could be 6 to 9 months. I see different type of injury, I know, but Koscielny at Arsenal has been ruled out for 6 months this morning, done his Achilles. So, you know, if it's serious ligament damage, and the pictures don't look good, you're right, Dave, you know, when you see him there with a huge brace on his leg and supporting himself with crutches, it's an absolute horrendous issue for the lad, first and foremost, but also within the context of he was quite clearly their most saleable asset, and I think he was the one they would probably be looking at to plug the parachute deficit on the balance sheet. And then once that's plugged, we're talking about Oliveira earlier, then in terms of, again, it'll be what Norwich move on, they can potentially refresh the squad with in terms of the finance. But I think Madison money was ring-fenced, I would assume, to basically deal with the gaping 20 million plus hole on the balance sheet. So if that isn't an option, then you're going to get into all sorts of difficult terrain, and unfortunately Stuart Webber's going to have to try and unpick that maze. But as I say, it's hard to hypothesise about what could happen until we actually definitively know Madison's done X and he's out for Y. And once we know that, then things will start to become a lot clearer, I think.
Yeah, then we can analyse it. I'd imagine Mr Webber needed a drink by the end of the night. He must have been cursing his luck. While we're on the finances of it all, I mean, the game has changed to an extent, isn't it? But if you think back to that, you know, we've got this Legends game coming up at Carrow Road on 20th of May, partly marking 25 years of the UEFA Cup team. Back in the early 90s, late 80s, fans didn't worry so much about the finances, did they? And I think there's been quite a lot of people sort of saying, why is everyone worrying so much about the finances? Is it just the Football Manager generation? Everyone actually loves all that transfer stuff? Or is that just that the game has actually changed so much by broadcasting money?
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess if I'm right, there was 32 million in parachute money, and that went down. And this year is Mike said in his piece this morning, the big fat zero, zilch, whatever words you want to use. So, you know, the difference in that, so having no available money in that pot this year is what makes a difference. And I think that's why it's so much more obvious now to fans why, you know, that cash makes a massive difference. And when you haven't got it, you miss out. And the other clubs, clearly the clubs are going to come down, whoever they may be, Stoke and two others will have money. You know, and you've got some, whoever miss out on the playoffs, those three are going to be probably better off than we are. And you've got, you know, the Leeds and those sort of teams have probably have got possibly more money as well. So you then, you know, if you're talking about money, you're fighting against a lot, you know, more profitable outlets and outfits than we are.
Yeah, that's going to make things difficult. Okay, so the Championship, just to have a quick look at the table. Wolves already up, they went up as champions. Cardiff did join them in the end, which means Fulham will have to go through the playoffs. They take on Derby, who Cameron Jerome seems to have found a bit of form for, doesn't he? Yeah. Apparently demolished Barnsley. Villa Borough is the other one, and it's Sunderland, Burton and Barnsley who go down. Barnsley getting rid of manager Jose Moraes fairly soon after full time. And as far as Norwich are concerned, they did slip two positions with that defeat at Wednesday. Ipswich and Leeds both got above them on goal difference. So finished 14th, won 15, drawn 15, lost 16. That's pretty average, isn't it?
Mid-table mediocrity, isn't it? You know, if you want a stat that sums it up, that's exactly the one, isn't it?
Absolutely. And who have we got coming down so far? Stoke, perhaps, with Mr Lambert.
West Brom.
West Brom possibly, and the others soon to be sorted. Wigan and Blackburn coming up, and Shrewsbury, of course, with a couple of Norwich loanees, have got Rotherham in the playoffs, so they're still to be settled as well. So we've got all those issues. Quite a few other bits and pieces as ever with Norwich City. Alex Tete, new contract, middle of next week, couple of years. pleased with that? Are you surprised by that?
Well, I think in the context of who's likely to go and who we haven't got, I think having that sort of experience is going to be important. So I think most fans I've spoken to see it as good news. You know, you know what you're going to get with Tete. He's not going to play every minute of every game by a long way, but when he's in there, he knows his job and he does it. And there's a little bit of that's what I'm talking about, Hanley. You know, you know what you're going to get from him. So I think for me, that's got to be good news.
I'm looking forward to having Ben Godfrey to take the load off him a little bit next season as well, and see if he can step up to the Championship and really make that difference. And also in potentially a tough away game like that, that you could put two of them there to really protect your defence. Looking ahead then, obviously there's going to be a lot of changes. Just to start with the loanees, Angus Gunn very much looked like he was saying goodbye at the end. Harrison Reid was alongside him. I suppose he will depend on whether Southampton come down or not. And Moritz Leitner's put a fairly emotional Instagram post up, which is on pinken.com as well already, which you could perhaps read into that it doesn't look likely that he's coming back. Do you think any of those three might be back in the building next year, Pad?
Of those three, I think Reid would be back if Southampton stay up, because I just don't think he's quite ready. You know, I take your point, and I also take Kharky's point on him. I think he's at the minute potentially a very decent Championship operator. Not sure he can certainly at this stage of his career go in and be a regular feature for the Saints at Premier League level. So ergo, Southampton stay up, he's not going to feature there. Why wouldn't he want to come back here? He's clearly loved it. You know, I think a lot of the interviews he's done second part of the season, he doesn't want to go back to development football. He feels he's way past that now. And having clearly enjoyed his time under Daniel Farker, who reciprocally believes in him and has given him not only game time now at centre midfield, but obviously right wing back, right back. And the way Harrison took to that, I think you get the sense that he would love to be reunited with Farker and vice versa. So, yeah, I can see that one definitely happening. Yeah, the other two, probably unlikely with Gunn, because I think conversely he is probably now ready to step up and go into a loan situation at mid to lower level of the Premier League. Swansea obviously would, those type of clubs, I think, you know, what they went to Chelsea and got Tammy Abraham this season. Why wouldn't those ilk of clubs look at a lad like Gunn, who's really embellished his reputation? And Leitner, well, I think Farker's side of the fence, he'd love to bring him back, but that might be tied into Maddison. You know, if Maddison is going to be here, then you don't probably need another player in that sort of mould. And also pushing up from underneath, we're talking about Godfrey, young Cantwell. You know, he's clearly impressed in albeit a smallish body of games at Sittard. But if he comes back and has a Jamal Lewis type pre-season, I know, as you rightly pointed out earlier, Dave, he did finish on a bit of an injury note, so we don't know the extent of that injury that in his final loan game for Sittard. But if he comes back fit and firing in pre-season, he could be in and around it. So, as always, you know, a lot of moving parts, really. But the original question of the three, I think we'll probably see Reid back here.
I'd be really interested to see how Todd does in pre-season, because I think he's got a lot of talent and he's 20. For me, I did Leitner on the player watch on Saturday, which is pinken.com. I thought he looked a bit lost at first when he moved into Madison's position, because we've not seen a great deal of him there. But then I thought he really grew into it, and he certainly created once the game was stretched in the second half and Wednesday weren't worrying too much about defence. So for me, him, yeah, if you can get him back on loan, I'd do that. I wouldn't be forking out too much money. And similarly for Reid, I wouldn't be paying money for him, but I'd happily have him back on another year's loan if that's possible. Gunn, of course, I'd happily have him back. But for me, if he wants to play football for England, he needs to be getting himself a lower Prem deal. Where do you stand on him, Clark?
Yeah, I'd agree with all of that. Certainly Angus is really well thought of, and that sort of, yeah, middle to lower Premier League club. And I've made my view clear on Reid, so I'd like to see him again. And in terms of Todd Cantwell, go on the other side. Dearham boys recover well from injury, so he'll be fine. And I, you know, I've spoken to a lot of people who know him from coming through as a lad playing at various levels, and he just seems to be a boy that just really wants to play football. So clearly, I just hope that he's given a good chance and really takes it.
Okay, you mentioned Jamal Lewis there as well, Pad. Didn't have the best of games on Saturday, did he?
No.
Is it fair to say that, well, the first goal, it was he got beaten on halfway line, and then for the ball in the air. And the fifth goal, it was him that conceded the penalty, but didn't really go for him well defensively. I mean, he burst onto the scene really good, didn't he? And then he has plateaued to an extent, despite being capped by Northern Ireland in that time. Do you think it's just fair to give him that little bit of breathing space once he's got a full pre-season under Daniel, then we'll really see him? Or do you think there's a bit of worry maybe creeping in?
No, definitely not. No, I mean, the issue we haven't touched on is that from that emergence in pre-season to making his debut, I think it was Brentford just before Christmas, but his full debut I think was Boxing Day. He was literally out for 5 months of that first part of the season with a knee injury, which, if you're an established senior professional, that would be difficult to come back in after that length of layoff. But for a young lad who hadn't played any senior football up to that point, and I think this, what you've seen in the second part of the season, I mean, Wednesday, Sheffield Wednesday, very similar to what we saw from him at Hull, where he was just off it, just fractions off it, and it's like that lunge that he makes for the conceding the penalty. We saw that at Hull as well, when you just mentally and physically a little bit frazzled, but you know, because you're a young lad stepping up into that quite demanding level of football, and you just split seconds is all it takes and you make the wrong decision, and then obviously you get punished for it. So no, I wouldn't have any fears. He's clearly got talent and ability, and on balance I think he's been a major plus point for Norwich this season, and that's, they need to find more like him in that academy, because that's the way financially the club is set up now, certainly in the short to mid-term. So, yeah, no, let him rest up, and which is a slight bone of contention. You touched on Northern Ireland. I think they've got two far away friendlies now. I think they're off to Central and South America as World Cup cannon fodder for you know, in terms of friendlies. So you would assume, having made his debut for the Northern Ireland in the last international break, unfortunately he's not going to be able to put his feet up for a few weeks yet. He's probably going to have to go across the Atlantic, and that's, from a Norwich perspective, not ideal. But again, it underlines, you know, Michael O'Neill, look at the job he's doing with Northern Ireland. If he thinks Jamal Lewis is now ready for the senior setup, it's another, for me, a badge for that lad. So yeah, no, I think let him get some rest over the summer, and he, for me, you know, is basically Norwich's first choice left back for the start of next season, and unfortunately that probably means James Husband is again probably going to have to play second fiddle, and as I said earlier, a lot of moving parts transfer wise this summer. I think a lad like a Husband, a lad like a McGovern, if they, not even getting into Jarvis, Naismith and Martin, but these fringe lads in terms of the finances and freeing up wages, if you were Webber, I think you'd like to drive them wherever, because I don't think they're going to feature, because let's be honest, you poll 100 Norwich fans now, Jamal Lewis or James Husband, fairly unanimous decision.
101.
Yeah. I'll go to Peru and Mexico if Jamal wants a rest, but I'm not sure I can do much of a job at left back for Northern Ireland.
Oh, you'll do it, Dave, you'll be fine.
You concur with basically
all of that? Yeah, I mean, you know, people like Naismith is, from what I understand, still on good money, and Russ Martin must be on decent whack as well. And that is, you know, when we're talking about really scrimping and saving every, you know, every pound counts, then that is important, Dosh, isn't it? And if you've got lads who are coming through the Godfreys and those sort of boys that are going to do in their own position as good a job, then they're going to be much cheaper. So it's got to be the way you go.
Well, we shall see. I've got a feeling it's not going to be a quiet summer now. There's plenty started. Another little bit of news. The club have confirmed the young players who are going out, the headline names being Ebu Adams, Michio Fite, Louis Ramsey. Louis Ramsey, the only one who got anywhere near the first team, was on the bench at Southampton in the FA Cup last year. So they all move on. No big surprises. The only one senior-wise is Paul Jones, the backup keeper, but he's only played one game for the club in two seasons, so he's already out on loan at Exeter.
I'll play the Carrow in goal as much as that.
I'd imagine there will genuinely be some fans who say, Paul Jones, yeah, who's that? So I don't think he'll be getting a new contract. To move on from there, then, the one sort of remaining news line, which we haven't covered, because clearly, like I say, we've got a busy summer ahead of us to talk about all these if, buts and maybes in the transfer market, the Martins, Naismiths, Jarvis, etc. And so much of it now depends on James Maddison. But just to kick it all off, Daniel Farke has been linked with Eintracht Frankfurt in Germany. Germany's top flight, no less. They're going to play Bayern Munich in their cup final, and they are seventh, in the Bundesliga. And their coach, Niko Kovac, is going to Bayern. He is going there in the summer. And Daniel Farke is On their long list, potentially. Whether he's on the short list, I don't know. But Freddy Bobic, former German international, is their sporting director, and he's actually gone on record to say that Daniel is somebody that they're aware of, which is a bit of a surprise and perhaps a little bit of a cultural difference with England. Daniel, they did have a quote as well from Daniel, didn't they, which basically dismissed it, saying, I've got a job here at Norwich. You know, very political response from Daniel. A little bit of a surprise at the timing. Do you think Norwich fans need to be worried about sort of, well, I suppose it would cause a sort of fresh chaos, really, wouldn't it? Because it would then throw everything into sort of new doubt.
Yeah, no, it's completely unwanted, and given that, as we've discussed in the last 25-odd minutes, Stuart Webber's in-tray is full to bursting. So,
yeah, busy boy.
If you then add in finding me a new head coach, says Delia, then, yeah, I think he might be inclined to go look for a darkened room. But more surprising is the club to be linked with. I'm not surprised that he might be getting touted, but Frankfurt are clearly a top-end German club, and... you know, you would have to say, being brutally honest, what has he done in the previous 12 months at Norwich to be getting linked to those jobs? But I think you might have some that you can add to that, having spoken to Dan O'Hagan, just in terms of why Farkas' stock might be higher than looking at it from this side of the footballing sort of divide, you might automatically think, because it doesn't seem to stack up looking at it through a Norwich City prism, but... that's not maybe quite the way they look at things in Germany.
Yeah, it would be a big step up, clearly, for Daniel. I had a chat with Dan O'Hagan, who probably most Norwich fans know. Lives in Norwich, but he does a lot of Bundesliga commentary, and back in the day he's done a lot of Premiership commentary as well. And he essentially said that there is a trend for young head coaches over there at the moment, because the system which Norwich have of sporting director and head coach is obviously embedded over there, so a younger head coach isn't as much of a problem. But essentially, that a lot of their judgments seem to be made on the academic side of it. So when these guys who get their coaching badges at young ages, if they finish top of their class and they've got a philosophy, then clubs take notice. The names are Julian Nagelsmann, who's at Hoffenheim, who's only 30, Domenico Tedesco, who is Tedesco, who's only 32, and he's got Schalke. I think they were the closest team chasing Bayern Munich this year. So young guys who have shown an analytical knowledge for the game, and from what Dan's heard, Daniel Farker has high stock because he's shown that sort of potential when he's been getting his coaching badges, and that's why he was the coach of Borussia Dortmund's under 23s essentially. So more on that in Tuesday's EDP. Dan will explain that all a little bit better. But Clarkie, does it worry you? I mean, there is obviously a strain of people on online who have welcomed the news, because in the aftermath of a 5-1 defeat, they're still hurting, and a 14th place finish in the championship. There are some people who are ready for a new man, but I don't think that's the overwhelming feeling, is it?
No, and I think those that are saying that have probably got a slightly unrealistic pair of glasses on, thinking, you know, Farker goes, somebody else comes in, immediately has a magic wand, all sorted out, and yeah, we were challenging for top two next season. Whereas you're both absolutely right, that would create that massive uncertainty, add to all the woes that we're already facing, and, you know, guys that are going to come in immediately change things around aren't you know, off the shelf, and clearly a lot of the squad's been built around Farker, and if you have to then unpick that and start again, you're looking at all the problems added to with more. So I hope he stays. I mean, he's not the perfect deal for me by a long way, but I certainly don't want to go down the route of, you know, adding all that to the uncertainty we've already got.
It would feel to me like he'd be leaving Norwich in the lurch to an extent as well, given that they've made him such a focal point and how well he's spoken about the club, and that he came in knowing full well that the costs were needing to be cut and things like that. Would you feel let down by him if he jumped ship at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose after a lot of years as a football fan, you start feeling, and I don't really feel let down to an extent because these things happen in football, but it would seem a little bit, you know, unwelcome for that to happen.
Okay. Well, we'll see how that develops, but I think we're all at the point where we're thinking it. Farker isn't exactly imminently going to be announced as Frankfurt's manager. I'll touch wood now, because clearly this will go out a few hours after we've actually said it, but I don't think Daniel Farke would have left Norwich by then.
I think that I've seen some reports in Germany they don't intend, as in Frankfurt, making an appointment this side of the German Cup final, and that's May the 19th, so it's certainly not going to be in the next couple of hours, mate.
Excellent. That is good news. Right, I think we can wrap it there, chaps. Lots more to get your teeth into. We've got our annual end-of-season survey at pinken.com. If you haven't taken part in that already, please give it a look. As many different subjects as we could squeeze into a sensible amount of time for a poll. Lots of things covered in there. Season tickets, best goal of the season, best signing. You can rate Daniel Farke, you can rate Norwich City overall this season. Several things in there. And then we've got a special Pinken on Saturday, which will have all the results of that. Also keep an eye out, we'll have a separate poll where you can rate, not rate, but basically whether you would keep or sell the players, going for each player in Norwich City's squad. So if you think Stephen Naismith and Yannick Wildsker are the ones to go, you can tell us. And if you think that Grant Hanley and Nelson Oliveira or whoever are the ones that they should keep, you can also let us know. And that equally will make up a Saturday Pinken, which is going to be basically the fans' evaluation of the campaign. So please do give that a look. The Pinken Show is back Wednesday night. Michael Bailey, of course, back down the pub. I'm not sure who his guests are yet this week, but that will be back as usual, 7 o'clock. And we will have plenty more for you throughout the summer. As I say, I don't think it's going to be a quiet one. Right, Clarky, Pad, thanks very much for today. And we will catch up with you with another pod, I'm sure, not too far in the future.
Good day.